cup of tea, yeah. Solved all problems.
If you can't look good, might as well smell good, right?
No, might as well smell good, yeah. I smell fresh and citrus fruits at the moment.
All right, Mark, let's get into this. We are here, of course, Mark and Andy talking about James Bond films. We are up to the legendary, the classic Diamonds Are Forever, the return of Sean Connery. Let me run down some quick numbers.
A missed opportunity.
Yes. Let me do my numbers real quick. We'll talk about it, and then we're going to get into breaking this film down and the good and the bad of this film. First of all, Rotten Tomatoes has this thing sitting at 64% with the critics and 57% with the audience. I'm going to go with that's a pretty fair assessment of this film.
Yeah.
Their budget for this was $7.2 million. This is 1971 now. And, of course, massive success of the Bond series. So the budgets are getting bigger and bigger. The box office, according to my information, was $116 million they made off this film. And that's a pretty good return on your money. Written by Richard Maybaum and Tom Mankiewicz. I think I'm saying that right. Mankiewicz. And, of course, directed by Guy Hamilton.
Who did Goldfinger.
Did Goldfinger, correct. And this is the return of the legend himself, Sean Connery, after the one-off George Lazenby experience. So this is kind of the – and Mark, you and I have talked about this – we've talked about this before. This is the I don't want to say controversial, but Lazenby was offered a 6-picture deal, 7-picture deal to come back and
seven movie deal
to be Bond. Like he was handed the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah,
and with the sack of a Zeus Greek god, he said not interested. So they went back to the well with Connery. Did they ask him, or did he?
They begged him to come back. The head of the studio, whose name escapes me, I think it's David Pickford. They offered him $1 million and financing for 2 films of his own choice, I think, to get him to come back. And $1 million per film at the time was, I think, that was the record.
Probably, and of course, Connery comes back, and I'm going to go out on a limb, Mark. Now, is this number 6 in the series?
Six or seven.
Out of all the films I've seen so far, again, you have seen them all. I'm watching them in order. This is by far the worst of the Bond films I have ever seen.
Yeah.
And you'd warned me in front. You're like, this isn't a great movie. You're not going to really enjoy it. And This is our job to watch these films for this podcast. And I sat down and I saw a running time of 2 hours. And I was like, well, let's settle in and watch this bad boy. And bad was the operative word of that sentence. This movie does not hold up at all. It seems like to me, and you have far more critical eye of the Bond series than I do. But man, it seems like they were just phoning this thing in from the writing, the acting, everything. This film was just, I don't even think it's that even great to watch as a piece of work, you know. And I'll real quickly, I'll give you where it sits. We use Movie Phone has a ranking of all the Bond films in order. And this one this is up to Die Another Day. Or not Die Another Day. Stupid.
No, there's Die.
They have 25 films listed here, which I think that's current. They have Diamonds Are Forever as sitting at 22 out of 25.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And their quick little quote on it is, Diamonds Are Forever serves as both Sean Connery's last official Bond movie and the end of Bond's original conflict with the organization Spectre. It's got some fun moments along the way, but the franchise was clearly shifting in a campier direction that didn't suit Connery's steadfast agent 007 at all. And I will agree.
Campy
is really it. This film just seemed goofy.
I think I've told you before, but if there's a bomb film, the bomb films are on TV here. I'll have them on in the background. I'll sit down and watch them. I've seen them all countless times. But with Diamonds, it doesn't really hold my attention. I've never liked it. I don't think it's a great film. And poor old Sean, he looks old, he looks tired, and he looks slightly overweight, to be honest. So it's just.
Would you say when he's in the hotel room taking his clothes off? Would you say he looks?
He's
like
taking his clothes off. He comes back to his hotel room. There's Tiffany Case lying in that preposterous bed, full of fish, and he's taking all his clothes off and walking towards her. And he's clearly, naked, and he just looks out of shape. He looks like an old miner. He's come home, took his hat off, put it down. He just doesn't look great in this film.
I will honestly say the highlight of the film for me when watching this was the 71 Ford Mach 1 Mustang.
Oh, the Mustang thing.
The car. And again, we will at some point in time get our friend Orion on here. We'll talk about all the cars. I thought I'd get a few films in and we can have a discussion. But those 70s, Bond films and the cars are always part of the appeal. They're so cool. I just read that, the chase scenes and stuff were done. They knew they were going to crash some cars and do some damage. And they had I guess you call it like an endorsement deal with Ford to use Ford cars. I think they've always used Ford cars when they use American cars since the beginning. And Ford's only insistence was like, you can crash the cars, we'll give you the cars, whatnot, but Bond has to be driving a Mach 1.
That was the new Mustang at the time or something.
That car screams American muscle badassery in its best form. Back when cars, they didn't give two shits about gas mileage. It was just about being big, obnoxious, and they lived up to it back then.
Yank tanks, as we call them.
Exactly. So let's get into the few notes I took. And again, I didn't take a ton of notes on this film because it really just doesn't. It was hard for me to get through it. It was 2 hours of really. And I mean, it's not the worst film I ever saw. I'm not trying to say that, but these films, and I think the using the word campy in this description is spot on, because this film gets into a ridiculousness of just dumb. And I mean, I guess they're coming off the heels of Batman 67.
Yeah, the two henchmen. What are they called? Wint and Kid. The two henchmen?
Yeah, those guys are ridiculous.
Obviously, camp homosexuals or sort of, it doesn't work. They are actually what you just said. They're Batman villains. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they should just had henchman number one and henchman number two t-shirts on. It was just dumb. And then they had the funeral home was Slumber Funeral Homes or something. Like, come on.
Yeah, but what an excuse for a great line though, because it's all about diamonds. This film, diamond smuggling, and he's. Connery's bringing that dead body back into the state, lands at Vegas. Felix Leiter's posing as a customs agent, goes up to the funeral, and they're pretending that they don't know each other. Felix Leiter says, "Well, where are the diamonds?" And he can't find them. And Connery goes, "Elementary, my dear Leiter. They're up the elementary canal." He's obviously shoved them up the corpse's rear end. That's a great line. "Elementary, my dear Leiter," I think he said.
I know, but I mean, even when they cut over to the guys waiting with the hearse, I mean, they just looked like seriously out of typecasting 101.
Yeah.
We need some guys that look kind of stupid, kind of Jersey guys. Hey, we're over here with them. But come on, man.
Yeah.
This is a James Bond movie. This isn't an Ed Wood film. I mean, this is horrible.
I would think Diamonds is a missed opportunity. It's a shame.
It is. And I would dare to say that they should remake this and try to give it at least a fair shot. I don't know. Who knows?
Brutal revenge movie, because we've just finished with One of Majesty's Secret Service. Blofeld has just killed Bond's brand new wife. he's ruined and out for revenge. It could have been a fantastic revenge thriller. Connery's come back. He's on a mission to find Blofeld, get his revenge because he killed Trent. It could have been great. At the beginning when it starts, you get a taste of that because he's going, where's Blofeld? Isn't he? He's beating up all these different people. He's looking for Blofeld. It could have been a great, great revenge movie, but it becomes this silly romp with diamonds in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. So the notes I have, I love the bikini strangling scene.
Oh yeah.
How Bond slides into the pool.
We don't get to see that on TV in England. They edit that out now.
What? Really?
Yeah, it's too violent towards women, which I suppose it is. I mean, but it is.
Well, but I mean,
time. But yeah, that when he whips the bikini top off and starts to strangle her with it, we don't get to see that in England anymore.
I don't even know.
That's the way of the world.
It's a movie.
I know.
He kills people. I mean, what about the violence towards men, the violence towards strangers, the violence towards innocent people being caught? I can't. That's a whole other.
No, last time I saw it on TV from the start, I noticed it straight away. They cut that bit. We don't see that anymore.
And I'm not endorsing violence towards women by any stretch, but do we just censor everything?
That's 2024.
Oh, God. I can't even.
Don't let it upset you, Andrew.
That's throwing me off my game. But anyway, so he just I just like how he slides in. I don't like that he kills the woman. I just like how he slides in and, you know, he's attempting to, I guess, seduce and takes the bikini top and strangles her.
Yeah.
It's slick. It's like, yeah, it's,
where's
Blofeld? He's on a mission. That's Blofeld. I have a note here because there's a scene where a scorpion's killing a person. And I just had a note. I wanted to look up, and I'll try to look it up, and I'll put it in the bottom here if I can find it. And if I don't, I don't. But how fast does it take a scorpion to kill a person?
Yeah, I don't know if it's as instantaneous as they make it look, to be honest.
Right. And that's why I was just curious. I know I'm sure they can. I mean, I always grew up with a great fear of scorpions, even though there's not a lot of them
in the Midwest. Think instantaneous is as they'd like you to think.
Well, if you remember, Mark, we were kids. The things that were going to kill you, again, knowing you grew up in England, probably not a big. I grew up in the Midwest of America, Ohio. Our biggest fears were quicksand.
Quicksand.
Being killed by a scorpion sting, you know. I've nary to see a scorpion in my life, and I don't know if quicksand even really exists. So, but if you watch TV growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, man, quicksand was a real
quicksand
threat.
Quicksand going on.
always watch out for quicksand if you're running through the jungles. The acting. So I wrote here, the acting is really bad. The two guys chasing the diamonds, which is, you said, Wit and...
Wint and Kid, I think they called them.
Yeah. I'm using the word horrible here. Horrible acting. Just flat, stale, stiff. It's just hard to watch. And again, when you're picking on these things, what I think the justification of being cruel and harsh about these films is there is a professional person known as a casting director. That's their job, to find the right actors for the movie. So a professional casting director picked these two idiots, these two actors, to act this bad. And then there's a director who, when he's watching the scene, and he goes, cut, that's keep. Print that one. That's the scene we're keeping. That's what irritates me. If you said this was a student film, got it. He's trying to figure things out. He doesn't know what he's doing. He has no experience. This is Guy Hamilton directing this film, who had done Goldfinger.
Goldfinger, yeah.
So he knows how to direct a movie. So was he just... Were there just mounds of cocaine on the set and he didn't care? Or was it... That's my irritation when I watch films like this. I don't expect every film to be Citizen Kane. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, when you see such bad acting and such bad writing and such bad everything, and you go back and look at see who did it, you were okay with this. You want this is on your resume, and you want people you want to use this as your calling card. This is my work. No, that just gets under my
skin. They're not great villains.
So anyway, there's that. I did notice. Maybe do you get this in over there in Great Britain? The dead woman in the pool. Do you see the nipples? Over here?
It's been a long time. I think we do. It's been a long time since I've seen the film.
I'm like, whoa, James Bond. Yeah. I see some flesh there.
Yeah.
I found the scene, and again, you have to understand that these films were shot at a different time. So I don't hold them up against modern day 2024, but it is weird to look back and how some things come across as violent, like the strangling scene probably isn't, really good. And sometimes racism or stereotypes pop in. And this one, I made a note, and it's a little, they show the circus scene and they make a big deal about a black woman turning into a gorilla.
That's right.
And I was like, God, that's an uncomfortable scene, man. Now I'm not judging them. I'm just saying you watch that now and I don't believe they put anything in there. They don't mean anybody, but it's a little uncomfortable to watch sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, Bond smacks a woman with a glove. That scene over there?
Yeah.
Do you recall?
I think it's played.
Because they don't mind them getting smacked in the face with a glove. That's not a problem. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about old films, and Gary and I, in our other podcast, we do Flick Flops, and we just did a film called Cloak and Dagger, which I don't know if you've ever seen that film, Mark.
Not seen it. No.
Dabney Coleman and Henry Thomas from E.T. It's a neat, kind of fun family film. But anyway, what I'm getting at is the film was shot in 1982-83. San Antonio, Texas. So I like looking back, and I love old films because you get to see a snapshot of what life used to be like.
Yeah.
So like in the one Gary and I just did, it shows them just running through an airport. Security's not really an issue. You know, people are just walking up to the gate. Well, you couldn't do that now. I mean,
different times now.
Like when you came over here to Nashville, I couldn't even get close to where you were coming off the plane. You know, now you got to go through some security. So I love in Diamonds Are Forever the look back at old Las Vegas. It was such a fun swinging, Frank Sinatra time. Would have been amazing. It's like I love watching old films that are shot in England back in the day, London, like 60s London. God, what a time to be alive.
London traffic back then looked far nicer than it is now.
It does. Yeah. Truly. So I like that. What else I got here? The notes. I heard the Mustang, of course, we talked about the fake moon studio. I don't know if that was a nod.
Moving around in slow motion, even though they don't need to be. Yeah, that's
they're not on the moon. Yeah. I wondered if that was a kind of a stab at.
Well, that's a dig at the. Yeah, were the moon landings real when they filmed in Area 51 in a TV studio? That's a nod at that, I think.
That's what I thought that was, and I thought, that's pretty funny. That's pretty cheeky. I'll take that one. The moon buggy, though. He's driving this thing, Mark, and it's got these arms. It looks like the robot from Lost in Space.
They used to do a toy version of it. I remember when I was a kid, I think you could get a toy version of it, and the little radar thing would go around at the back like that.
Oh, that would be fantastic to have that.
Yeah, they used to do a version of it.
There was a gaffe, I guess, or like a blooper. I got it. Now I'll try to put it in here.
Oh, with the Mustang. Editing.
Well, no, with the moon thing. There's a scene where the
wheel falls off, doesn't it?
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah,
a wheel bouncing around. It's great. Oh, I laughed.
But don't forget biggest goofy wall of the entire film is that Mustang going in on one side and coming out on the other. That's the biggest goof of all. Why they let that go, I don't know.
Well, again, as I said earlier about how there are professionals on, and maybe this stems from earlier Hollywood where they had to figure things out. But there's someone's job it is now to pay attention to continuity.
Mm.
And now I love to find continuity errors, and not as a dig. I just like to see if my eye can catch it. And that's exactly a continuity error. Someone should have noticed the car went in one way. It should have come out.
Error. It really is. It really is.
Yeah. You know, if you catch someone who's, you know, they're drinking a coffee out of a coffee mug in one scene, and like they do a cut to you, they come back and I'm drinking out of a Gatorade bottle. That's a continuity issue. Like, hey, somebody's supposed to be paying attention to that, or they don't have their wristwatch on or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I loved the whole Vegas car chase scene. Was just fantastic. It reminded me, it's like Dukes of Hazzard stuff, man. Cars are flying up, and I love it. You know, it makes you think of the old. Did you ever see Bullet? Steve McQueen.
Oh well, the car chase in that, yeah, of course, it's a classic.
Yeah.
But again, with me, it's a Bond film. And the fact that most of it's based in the States, and there's a big sort of chase around the streets of Las Vegas, it looks like it could be any other sort of action movie. Bond movies tend to be in glamorous places with, do you know what I mean?
They're supposed to be more intellectual, not that's cheap.
Based in the States, and there are all these big American cars flying around. And everything. It could be any other action movie. It doesn't really stand out as a Bond film to me.
Here's the thing, too, is I don't know why, and again, I haven't read all the Bond books, but why are they set in the States? This is James Bond, international British agent. Like, to me, they should be set in exotic locales, you know, the Alps, you know, the Caribbean, which we've had before. You know, not that the States isn't exotic. I guess if you're going to pick a spot, Vegas is probably a spot to do it, but...
A red Ford Mustang being chased around the streets of Las Vegas could be any other action.
It could be any film.
Yeah,
and you're right on. It's just cheap and lazy. It's lazy filmmaking to me. I mean, I love a good car chase film. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying. I when I think of James Bond, I think of this super intellectual spy thriller, and I didn't get that with Diamonds Are Forever at all. You know, oh, and the two girls, Bambi and Thumper, just ridiculous.
Yeah, they're quite good.
I mean, they're great to look at, but the fight scene's just weak, cheesy, weak, blah. This film, I don't have a whole lot to say about this movie.
You're not impressed with this one, are you?
I was not, and I mean, when you told me up front, you're like, this is not going to be good. I was like, well, this is a guy who's, you know, he's on the verge of his Roger Moore era. He wants to move into the Roger Moore films. I get it. He's like, yeah. Just move forward. And then I watched it, and I was like, God, this is hard to watch, man.
Yeah, it's not a great watch. It's not.
And I watch a lot of movies, you know, because again, I do another show with my friend Gary. We have to watch and review films, and watching the Bond movies, and I just and I'll say this sadly too is because we're 50 years. Beyond that, and writing today has gotten, we're so much better, I mean, than we were back then.
Yeah,
you know, go back, you and I talk, we're both fans of Starsky and Hutch. Go back and watch Starsky and Hutch now. It's really horrible. The writing is atrocious, but at 13 I thought that was the greatest thing ever seen.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Begged my parents to let me watch it. It's too violent. It's on too late. Got to go to bed.
But the thing is, too, as you think about, Mark, our parents, as adults, would sit and watch these same shitty shows with us. Like, Dad, you didn't have any? You didn't think this was bad writing? You know? Yeah. Maybe he did. Maybe my dad didn't care. You know? He's like, shut up. It keeps the kid quiet for an hour. Let him watch it.
I remember my dad being quite dismissive of Starsky and Hutch, but there we are.
What was the show that you watch over there? The had Tony Curtis in it, is it?
Oh, The Persuaders.
Persuaders.
Roger Moore and Tony Curtis. Yeah, I love that show. That's on here every night, and it has been for a lot. They just keep repeating the show. We've got a TV show, a channel over here, and it plays lots of sort of late 60s spy shows, things like that. And The Persuaders is on every night. Well,
how does The Persuaders... I mean, is it cheesy and bad plot too and all that?
Oh yeah, but that's part of the appeal of it. I mean, it's a humorous sort of almost slapstick, the action, some of it. But that's the way it's supposed to be. But yeah, The Persuaders is great. I love them. Great show. The music.
I'm going to check that out. I got to find a way to. Maybe, I wonder if that's on BritBox. I'll get BritBox and watch that, or if I can find it somewhere.
It's worth watching just for the opening credits and the music alone. It's a great show.
Yeah, well, you've sent me the clip before, and I'm like, man, that is kind of cool looking. I'm ready to wrap this thing up. This was just...
We'll move on from diamonds, then.
Let me look real quick. Hold on, I want to check a couple of reviews. Let me do this real quick. Rotten Tomatoes has... let me see a few of these. This one person, Carson Timar, wrote, "With a sense of lifelessness, Diamonds Are Forever easily is the most boring Bond film."
That's it. I mean, it is. It's just flat. It's a bit dull. It ends up on an oil rig with helicopters and machine guns. It just doesn't work for me.
This Although person it's got, wrote,
there's one thing we haven't mentioned. My favorite part in the entire film, that fantastic line, and he delivers it so well. It's just perfect Connery. When he's in the Vegas casino, he's at the craps table. He's throwing his dice, and Lana Wood comes up to him playing Plenty O'Toole, and she's very short, very attractive, very busty, shall we say, in a slightly revealing dress. And she goes, "Hi, I'm Plenty." And Sean Connery turns around, looks her up and down, and goes, "Of course you are." And she goes, "Plenty O'Toole." And he looks at her again and goes, "Named after your father, perhaps." And it was just, it's my, one of my favorite lines. "Named after your father, perhaps. Plenty O'Toole." I think that's great. It's a great line.
Yeah. Some of the lines are fine, the wittiness, but the overall script just isn't.
Yeah, it's flat. It's like that guy's just saying, flat, lifeless. It's just, poor old Sean looks like he's just doing it for the money. He looks old and tired. Best we move on to Roger Moore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so what's our next one, Mark? What do we got?
Live and Let Die, 1973.
What are your thoughts on the early thoughts?
Fantastic theme song. It's great action, Roger Moore, and I'll fight anyone who says Roger Moore isn't a great James Bond. He's super.
Live and Let Die. I mean, this was the only thing I remember. Again, we've talked before about theme songs. This is the one great for me that just is. I mean, arguably, maybe in the top, or if not the top Bond theme song, maybe it is. I don't know, but it's one that just
great theme.
It echoes today, 50 years later. I'm still like, God, that song is so great.
It's a cracking Bond. So it's got everything you need. It's a great. It's a great theme.
I saw McCartney live. God, it's probably been 12 years ago.
Never seen him
in Cincinnati. Saw him in Cincinnati, and he does. I believe this was the final song of the night.
Yeah,
and God, I mean, gave me chills. Man, it lived up to everything. He's playing the Cincinnati Reds baseball stadium, and you know, when it's like da da da, so live and let die. That boom, when he does that, man, fireworks just shot off the top of the stadium, and I was like, whoa! It was because as a Kiss guy, I was like, oh, this is what I expect out of a show. This is a concert, man, and. Hey, we'll discuss when we get to Live and Let Die, but legendary. What about the theme song on this one? Does it memorable?
It's Shirley Bassey. It's a good one. Shirley Bassey never turned in a bad one. Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, and Moonraker, she did. And I think Diamonds Are Forever is a good song. It's a good Bondian song.
So we can find some positive in this thing with a decent theme song.
But generally, if it's on TV here, I don't tend to watch it. Doesn't do it for me.
So do our plots start getting better with Roger Moore's film? Do we get better, the new writers better?
Oh, no, there's some ridiculous plots coming. There's some nonsense coming, but it's all good. It's all good. Never Let Die is a bit more grounded. There's some voodoo thrown in there for good measure.
Well, Mark, I mean, I know we have been a little slack on getting our episodes out, and I am determined to get through
all these. Andrew, that's all right.
I'm determined to get through these Bond films. Some of them are not the easiest things for me to do. But I'm determined.
Mark. Good. You'll enjoy that. And another, it's based in the States. A lot of it's in New York. You'll be right
out of the States. I want to see Bond. I want to see London, man. I want to see England. I want to see Scotland, Ireland.
Nice coming.
Yeah, I got some time off coming up this week, so I'm going to try to knock down a couple of Bond films. We're going to get caught up. Mark and I are going to spend some quality time chatting.
Quality time.
And get some quality street chocolates, and we'll call it a day.
All right. See you
soon.
Some
PG tips. Well, thank you, everybody. Right, Mark and I will return with Live and Let Die be the next episode. So cheers from Nashville, everybody.
Farewell from London.
This has been a Touch of Madness production, brought to you by the creative minds at Tommy Twins Media.